We're back. The Nordic Leaders podcast comes roaring back and goes global for season 5 with the theme of Fail Smart, lessons in leadership and life.
We still have conversations that matter with extraordinary people based in the Nordics.
And we speak to experts and thought leaders globally from Abu Dhabi to Zimbabwe.
In our most popular pods, our guests open up about themselves, what they've learned along the way, and with the courage to talk about setbacks.
Indeed, the stuff that didn't quite work out how they intended, but how they came back stronger and wiser.
So, all the best elements of the Nordic Leaders podcast are still there, but there's a few extra questions about the ups and downs of life.
So join us, David, Nick and Stefano, as we explore failing smart with our hyper-successful guests.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, connect with any of us on LinkedIn, and 5-star ratings. They're okay if you like what you hear.
Indeed, 5-star ratings are okay. Let's get started with Fail Smart. So, David, Stefano and myself, Nick Vertigans, are delighted to welcome our special guest today, Céline Pazola, Managing Director of gaming firm Ubisoft Redlynx. Céline has over a decade of leadership experience in top mobile gaming companies, ranging from startups to the big companies. Today, as the Managing Director of Ubisoft Redlynx, she's working with experiences on all platforms, mobile, PC and console. Céline is not only an expert in leadership, finance, legal and business development, but also in building a great company culture. She's a fast-thinking leader with a big heart for game development. When it comes to gaming itself, apparently she's one of the most competitive players you will ever meet. Céline, a big warm welcome today. Thank you for being with us. How are you?
I'm good. Really nice weather and it's Friday, so nothing to complain.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good right now. And David and Stefano, it's great to have you with us as usual.
Thank you, Nick. It's lovely to be here. And hi, Céline.
Hello, Céline, from my side as well. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Céline, we're going to go straight in with the first question. What is the biggest learning moment that has shaped who you are today?
That's not the easy first question, but really good one. So definitely
you should say the next one.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'll risk it. but excited at the same time. Apparently there's of course many of the great learnings, but I would pick the one which is maybe also personally one of the biggest ones that have shaped me, but I see the strong connection also who I am today as a leader. So it's really about becoming a mother. That was a really big change, of course, for me, but also like how I see the leadership these days and leading companies. It's really important.
Céline, what's the link? What's the connection between leading people and companies and the most important job in the world, being a mother?
I think not adding any pressure for my daughter. I think one of the things that I always think that anything I do at work also, if I can face my daughter proudly and with those decisions and still really being able to meet her, I think that's when I'm in a good place. It's definitely something to do with the kind of committing to decisions and the direction I'm taking. And then also at the same time, able to be proud of that. So I think my daughter is a good place to mirror that. So if I can imagine facing her with those decisions, I'm in the right path and in the right place. And also, yeah, it's something that it was a result of long thinking. And I really like that result, what I came up with. I think it has been important for me. But it has been also many other ways, it has been so eye-opening. I have one example this is just one of many, but one of the examples, for example, that I was in, she was quite small back then. I think she was 4 or 5 or something. But I was in a meeting, and in a business meeting, and I couldn't get the babysitter for her. So I took her in the meeting with me. And she said to me after the meeting that, "Mom, why wasn't there any women in the meeting other than yourself?" And I'm like, oh my God, like these are so smart things what she's observing and telling me, that I'm so blind to many things. And I think like these kind of moments, I really see that it's so important to have that fresh view, having someone observing, questioning things. So I hope I keep that also myself. And I, of course, I can't carry my daughter with every place with me, but I think it's important reminder that how blind we get and how easily.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, it's a lovely example, Celine. Thank you. Difficult first question, but an excellent answer. David.
Following on from that, I was hearing that values-driven leadership there. I always think that values underpin what we do, but maybe at the top is the mission, what we're trying to achieve. Celine, how would you describe your mission as a leader?
It really comes from my background, but I believe that understanding the humans and how we work and really also understanding like that you can't always predict things and we are still humans end of the day, even if it's work context. But based on that thinking, I really think that my mission is creating the system and really creating the environments that everybody can thrive and do what they do best. So really trying to empower people around me and finding those people who fit the culture and also add new things to the culture, because that's always, of course, happens. But making sure that I'm not the bottleneck, I'm actually empowering people and giving them the ownership what they do best. So it's a mission for me.
So what's critical to that mission that people can thrive? How do you know that you're not the bottleneck?
That's a good question also. It's a lot of things. It's a kind of setting, of course, setting the goals for the people and making sure that everybody understands what their role is in the organization. And then making sure that they have things that they need to make that actually happen. So building that knowledge and sharing the information, being transparent and making sure that people, they are listened to and they are heard to. And then at the same time, of course, understanding that we can't do everything, but making sure that we have a clear focus and people are aligned with that and going in the same direction. So I think it's this constant conversation and discussions you have to be going through, and at the same time correcting if you see that the direction is tiny bit wrong, and then making sure that they have a freedom to do things inside that frame. So I think those are the things that you constantly do, basically.
I love that word you use, thrive. You said create systems where people can thrive. It's such a nice word. How are you doing? What helps you thrive? I heard about your daughter, but how are you doing with the thriving?
I love my work, I have to say. I think I love connecting with people and being surrounded with the people who are passionate about what they do and they are highly professional people, and then seeing them grow, I like that a lot. I think that's where I really get my energy, making sure that the environment is there and then seeing when people can achieve those goals. I think that's really what I find really empowering and inspirational for me.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. Nick, back to you. You asked me, what was I hearing? What are you hearing so far?
I've heard a lot about creating the environment, and I'm really interested that many of our listeners are trying to do the same. They're trying to create the right environment on their teams, whatever that means. It's really nice, as you say, the word thrive, somehow lovely, isn't it? And the fact that Celine says, I love my work. There was no hesitation there at all. And likes to see people grow. So Celine, what is it you're doing every day to create this environment?
I have a quite lot of knowledge on the biology, and that's because of my studies and background. But I sometimes refer this, the whole thing, to evolution theory. I think if you think about the species that has been winning over the time, it's not definitely not the biggest order, but it's definitely the ones who are most adaptable to the change. So they are willing to change with the environment and the market and so on. So when they see that the things are changing around them, they also are adapting in a, of course, it means right level of adaptation. So you shouldn't always change everything when something changes externally, but finding that right level and then making sure that those people who are thriving, that they are resilient for that and they are willing to adapt. And that's, I think, where it's really connected to psychological safety, because if people feel that they are safe at work, they are willing to adapt they are willing to do those hard calls and difficult choices and decisions. So it's really critical that they do things from the right mindset. And if we think that there's a lot of stress and risk for the people in today's world, work environment, how to make sure that they are still able to do those tough decisions. So sometimes it means that even canceling some of the projects they have been working on or really tough decisions. And if the people are in the right mindset, they understand that they are willing to say that out loud and they are not scared. And that's where I think it really comes from. But it means that those people have to have that right environment to be able to really achieve that goal.
Yeah. So psychological safety, mindset, this adaptability that you talk about linked to evolution theory. So I'm wondering, somebody who sits in your leadership team, what are they experiencing working with you? Because I sense that you are very tuned into people. And at the same time, I hear you talking about tough decisions and adaptability. And if something's not working, we're going to stop that project. We're not going to do it. So I just wonder if you're able to tell us a bit about what's it like being on your leadership team?
My perspective, so best answer would come directly from them, but since I'm the best you have for now at this call, so I think there are a lot of conversations. We openly discuss about topics and, of course, in the work context, but we have really open and transparent discussion and also honest. And we give feedback, we give constant feedback to everybody. And of course, we are really respectful. And that's, of course, the key thing. We are not afraid to say out loud if we see that something is not working. And constant questioning, of course, things. So I think a lot of conversations, but then also, of course, we need to get things happening. So it can't get stuck on just conversation level. But I think it's quite resilient, I would say, in that way that we need that. But then at the same time, I think we are always willing to make quite fast decisions if that's needed. And that's maybe something that I think people who work closely with me feel and see that also. But then it's nice to see that also that when there is those conversations and you have a good energy yourself, you can really give that energy to others also, and that they start thriving really, and the energy levels are going up. I think that's amazing. But I'm willing to be also always questioning things. That's definitely something I do a lot myself, and I expect people who work with me to do also.
Yeah, always be questioning. Definitely. What have you heard so far?
From the many things that I heard, I wanted to pick on this concept of leader as a gardener. And now, I didn't know that you had a biology background, but that kind of now seems evident to me in that sense. So it's really something which comes across very strongly that you're trying to do there. Building the right environment, watering the plants and making sure that they have enough fertilizer, making sure that they have room to grow. It's now, of course, people are not plants, but I think it's something which I feel like you're trying to do very strongly. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I haven't used that gardening term myself, to be honest, but I think that it's a nice way to explain it, because I think that's the leader's job, to really provide what people need to grow and make sure that you take away those roadblocks. So I think it's not adding more. I think taking away the ones I can, and then, of course, giving them also ownership, but also responsibility on the area they should have that. So it's also like this kind of framing things and giving that place to discuss, but at the same time, making sure that we all go in the same direction. It means at the same time, of course, that we can't do everything we feel like doing today. There has to be some kind of frame. And that's, of course, sometimes even tough conversations and not always easy. But if it comes from the right place, I think those has been the best conversations always, giving energy.
Yeah, pruning is part of gardening as well. So you have to cut to let the organization grow at the same time. There was another thing I wanted to pick on. You said at the very beginning, you said that it's about finding the people who fit the culture and add to the culture. And that's not an easy job, because either, how to say, if you don't completely fit the culture and you're adding to the culture, then there might be the addition is actually a subtraction. So how do you actually, do you have a framework, a mental model that helps you spotting these kind of traits in people that this fits the culture just enough, but has this other part that actually could add? So do you have some kind of tips that you can share with us?
I wish I could have some thoughts on it, but definitely not the answers. But I think it's more like a system, because if you think that you change part of the system, it's not the same system anymore. So the culture is pretty much the same, because I think sometimes I hear some people thinking that the culture is something constant and you keep it and you can control it in a way. Of course, you can do a lot of things. And what are those visible things part of the culture? So there's a lot of things like strategy and mission and all things, these things that the leaders are talking about. But then you think about the invisible part of the culture, which is also all the stories people tell, like everything, how you actually do things and those kind of stuff. So it's super complex system. And if you think that, because people are the ones who create that culture. So if, let's say that you have 100 people and three of those are changing, and maybe there's new three people coming, it changes the things. Of course, three in 100 is not that much, but it's still changing it in a certain direction. And you can't really fully control it, and you shouldn't even, because culture is the people. So I think it's really, what would be the right word? I would say maybe sensing. And of course, there's like surveys you can do, and you can do all, ask for the feedback and so on. But it's really about sensing how you feel, how people are, and how what kind of the energy levels are, and so on. It's really those unsaid things that you can tell a lot. And this actually goes a tiny bit back to my daughter, I have to say, because when I was looking for daycare for her, I said that I did like major research on it, and I was like, okay, what is the good daycare and so on. And it was interesting journey for sure. But I always thought that I want to go and see the place myself. I want to see those kids. I want to see how they are. They smiling? What are they doing? And thinking tiny bit similar at the culture, like you have to see it, you have to feel it. And that tells you a lot. I think that it's really about having that conversations and feeling and having those moments of by the coffee machine, for example, now after COVID is gone, I think you can do it again, but a lot of things that you use those moments to connect and really take the time to listen and then see, because it's constantly changing and you have to make sure that the direction is right. But it's a lot of things. And I think when we talk about the culture, many things about the visible things of the culture, but then you can't control the stories and you shouldn't control the stories. But it's also, as with the values, when the times get tough, that's when the values are really tested and how you behave and how you actually do things in a daily basis. So it's a complex system, I would say.
Okay.
Long answer.
Thank you. Going to another thing, which is constantly changing, the industry where you're in, many industries change, but I think gaming is also changing quite fast. So what do you think are the skills, if you look at the industry of gaming, what are the skills that are needed to succeed as a leader in your industry?
I think a lot of things that I have said already, definitely, but I think the adaptability and resilience, I would go back to that one, because we are definitely in an industry that it's still quite new and young if you compare it to some other industries. And it has been changing even like past 16 years that I have been part of this industry. It has been changing so much. It's constantly changing. And there's so many great companies with so many great games. How to make that next big thing and really be there? It's not definitely easy. But I think it comes from really being willing to listen and be willing to renew yourself all the time and really rethink the ways you do. And it's not like every Monday you change the direction, definitely not that, but be willing to be open and adapt in the right level to that. And then of course be willing to learn, and really when you have a failure or success or whatever, learning from it is critical. I think what I see a lot is that it's sometimes even easier to learn when you fail, because when you have a success, you are not really questioning that much. And I think with the failures, it's tiny bit, it's super challenging at the same time, of course, but it's sometimes easier to question things when you fail.
Thank you, Celine. David, what have you heard so far?
So many things I'd like to follow up on, but Celine, how are you doing? We keep throwing questions at you. Do you have anything that you want to ask us?
Oh, yes, of course. This is really interesting. So I have a lot of questions for you also. But I would like to really think about, hear more your thoughts on this also, that how you see this, maybe the biggest learnings for you also, and how do you see that resonating with my answers and so on. I think that would be interesting to hear from you. For sure.
I love what the starting point, the thriving and creating that environment where people thrive. And I think that is, leadership is definitely moving much more in that direction. So I feel we still have an industrial era legacy of command, control and correct in some organizations. But in other organizations, it is really moving towards involving and engaging and inspiring people. Maybe to answer the question, a lot of the things that you're talking about are flourishing in the organizations that we work with. I know this is another question, but I was particularly interested in when you mentioned the example that we were in that meeting, your daughter said, oh, are we the only woman? I'd be interested to hear about actions that we can create a culture where diversity thrives. I know that many organizations have great policies around hiring for diversity, but how about the culture where when we come in to the organization that we can really be ourselves?
I love that question. I love that. No, it's definitely one of the topics that I have been recently thinking a lot, to be honest, because I think there's so much question and there's so much talk around the diversity and inclusion, which is super critical and important. But I really look forward to have more conversations, the next step, what it actually means and how to live with that. I think the organizations, if you think about the kind of the culture, what we have been talking also earlier today and how we build that and how we add things to that and so on. I think the diversity we want, and we start having that now, and of course we want that more, but it comes with a lot of new things. It comes with, you need even more conversations. You need more communication and how to make that work. I think there's an old saying, guest bias of the communication is that you thought it existed. And I really think that's one of the smartest things I ever have heard. Because if you think that how many problems comes from the communication not working and how often that happens, you can look anywhere and you see that happening. And I think we don't even understand how much more we need that with this diversity. And of course, that means that we want to really also get value from it. And getting that value out from the diversity is definitely, the communication has to be working. And that's something that we have to do and change really deeply our systems and organizations, how that we can actually create that environment and system that supports it. So I think I come from the industry that we haven't had that much diversity in the early years, I would say. It was quite rare as a female to be there as a leader also. But I'm really happy to see that now we have more that. For example, my own leadership team, we have 60% of women there. So it's a great, and I really want to support that and have that diversity. But it just means like so much more time and need for communication. It's so much more, because if you think that there's exactly similar people with a similar background and similar way of communicating, it's much more easier to on the communication part. But then if you think that you have all these diverse group of people around you and you have to make sure that everybody really listens and communication is happening, it just, you need more times, you need more conversation, you need it. And how to plan that? It means time. It means more time.
Yeah, so a monocultural team can run together in the same direction very quickly.
Yes.
It's just that they might be running in the wrong direction.
Absolutely, so, all the different directions, which is not good either.
Yeah. Nick, what about you? What's your answer to Celine's question?
Yeah, Celine, thanks. Great question. One thing that we see a lot with our clients is that the best managers, the cream rises to the top during difficult times, during times of crises, for example. So when things get tough, that's when I observe that the best leaders, the best managers step up and people follow effortlessly. And maybe it's because of that, the conversation, the groundwork, the hard work that you're doing every day, that repetitive routine, creating the right mindset as you describe it, creating the right environment as you describe psychological safety. So maybe these constant conversations enable you to, at that point when you have to say, no, we're going to need to stop, we're going to need to shut down this project, we can't do this anymore. Difficult conversation moment, but maybe it's those, that constant day-to-day, you know, good habits that enables you to operate well at that point. So I don't know, maybe that's one thing I've heard, and that's certainly one thing that I observe with our clients. So I don't know how that sounds. Does that, how does that sound to you, Celine?
Yes, definitely. I do agree. I think you need that. You need to create the space for that. And end of the day, it's not about me. It's not about my ego. And that has been one of the focus areas that I have personally focused quite a bit, actually. And that was also my worry when I decided to do this CEO and MD roles. My thought was like, I want to make sure that my ego is doing well and it's in the right place. That has been maybe the personal growth path for me. It's really not about me. It's about making these environments and making sure that people shine. And it's not about me shining there. And that's what I think my daughter helps there also. She shows me my place. So it's when I think I'm too good at something, I think that's when I get in the right level again. So it's a constant kind of observation about where you are personally and your own well-being and all that. So it's a really thinking that and understanding your role as a leader also. And I talk quite a bit about the ego actually myself also. And I think it's something that you need to take as a leader. It's really not,
yeah,
it's really not about personally about me or my ego being as a managing director or CEO.
Yeah. And could you share what's one thing that you would advise, maybe one thing that you tell your leadership team about keeping your ego in check, if that's the right expression?
There's a lot of great books about it, so I'm a big reader myself, but I think it's really comes in the one question in my head: why are you leader? Why do you want to do this work? And what do you get from it? I think really understanding where that comes from, and then of course, I don't think there's one right answer to this, but I think you have to understand yourself where it comes from and why do you want to do this, because it's not, for sure, it's not the easiest job. And I think for me, it was really important before I took any of these positions, it was really important to think first myself alone. Why do I want to do this? What do I get out from it? Why do I believe that I want to commit to it and make sure that I'm successful in it? So I did quite a bit of thinking about it when I first took this role. And I think I found my right place, which is good personally for me. But yeah.
Yeah, great answer.
Your motivation, so, I think that would be it.
Yeah, so simple but powerful questions. David and Stefano, I've also got loads of thoughts around creativity and how...
Have you? Know, how... Well, that's a surprise on a Friday.
Yeah, I know.
especially for you, Nick.
So I'm sharing these thoughts with you two because I wonder if you have any questions or where you would like to go next. I'm also, as a second point, I'm also interested in Ubisoft, a French company headquartered in Paris. So I'm also interested in how Celine manages the French. That's an aside. But anyway, I'll leave those thoughts with you two, David and Stefano, and see if you wanted to go in any of those directions or if Celine wanted to go in any of those directions.
I loved the part that you were just talking about there, Celine. You used the word thinking a few times, and I perceive that you're a thinker. How would you describe the thinking environment in the organization?
That's a big question. I hope it's good. I think that we are putting a lot of time and effort to make sure that we have a safe environment and really having that psychological safety and understanding where that comes from in the work context. So we do put a lot of effort on that, and that's a critical for me. So I think we have a lot of that. And then of course, I think we have to make sure that the leaders in the company are in a same mindset and we support them to become better as a leaders also. So it's a lot of course trainings we do together and discussions and all this. So it's critical, but I think it really comes from the place of safe environment and in a work context. I think it's critical to understand that we are talking about the work context here, because safe means so many different things for different people and what is the environment they feel safe to be around and so on. So it's not the same thing for everybody.
Absolutely. And I think he touches what Nick was bringing in there when he mentioned it's a French headquarters, but the national culture or geographical culture and organizational cultures, they can often blend together, but they really do have an impact on that thinking environment in certain cultures where we're pushed more to be much in doing mode, that there isn't so much time for the being and stopping and thinking, and how we really cope with that in different cultures, that because we need that time. Our brains can't work
full
capacity the whole time.
Yeah. And maybe you ask it about, like, how do I do it personally also? I think my answer was quite wide and more organizational level. But personally, I'm really taking time from my calendar to think. So I might have a slot in my calendar that it's really for thinking. And that's critical, because if your days are full of meetings and you never have time to stop, it's you need the energy for that. And you can't rely that you will do it in the evening when you are done with everything else or that. So it really means that I'm quite strict about what kind of meetings I take these days.
Right.
And that there has to be a clear goal and agenda for that. And then sometimes it might be just conversations, because that's needed. But I work quite hard with my leadership team locally to create those moments that are really focused on the conversations, and then the time that we really use actually doing things and deciding things. You need time to reflect, and that only, I think, comes from the conversation. But how to book time for it? It has to be in the calendar. It can't only happen by the coffee or whatever. So being more strict about your who you meet and when, and these kind of things. And definitely not easy in the context of having global, being part of the global company which has offices in all the time zones pretty much, and great people who you want to connect on. So definitely not easy, but you have to make it. And I think as a leaders, we are also showing the example. We are showing example how we work on our calendars and how we do it and what kind of time we serve for our thinking. And because people will look you as a role model, and they will look what you do. So it's our job to make sure that we are great role models. So not always easy balance, since you have like million emails and 100 meetings coming up, and then you're like, okay, how can you be a role model? It comes from there. And
balance is an interesting word in that context, because what I hear is that there's a lot of freedom in the organization for people to be themselves and have that psychological safety. But with freedom, you also need discipline, and the discipline to reserve that time for yourself, and also to communicate those boundaries to others. It's not, otherwise people will not respect your time as well. So you need that balance of the freedom and the discipline.
And it's a big dilemma at the same time, because finding that and having all the things in a table at the same time.
Yeah. Dilemma was something we were exploring in the last podcast. So that's a nice link when we were talking about cultural dilemmas and also value dilemmas.
Indeed. Celine, where do you do your best thinking? Where and when?
Oh my God. I need my good night's sleep. I love sleeping, and that's, I need that. But I think it really depends what kind of decision is it in and how much information I have for the thinking and what level of thinking I need to do. But I think I need a lot of different things. I like those thinking together moments, I would say, having that reflective time with my team and really discussing and getting new ideas and having that fresh view. Because if you think only by yourself, you get stuck and it's easy to go in a loop mode. But I think when I have that, when I'm relaxed and I really know that I can have time for 1 hour, for example, to really think and focus on this. So I think it's not maybe a certain time of the day. It's more like having that moment that I know I'm not in a rush. I try to avoid thinking in the evenings too much when I'm, because I want to calm my evening and my nights. So make sure that I sleep well. But it's really that having that moment. So I think these days, actually, my best thinking comes through the day when I have booked those meetings with myself and with my having my thinking hat on. I think those are the best moments. But of course, you know, it's nice to be by the sea in a beach, of course, also at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who would say no to that? Yeah.
Thank you, David. Really nice questions there around thinking.
As a last question that we try to use in closing all the podcasts, we wanted to hear, now another photo is coming. So as a last question that we try to use when closing all the podcasts, we wanted to ask you, what is the number one lesson that you have learned for leading a successful life? That would be very interesting to hear.
I would say that understanding your personal values and having a time, taking a time to really think about it. And then, of course, in a work context, understanding what your personal values are and what the company values are and so on. So it's really critical that they're aligned. They don't have to be exactly the same, but they have to be aligned. So understanding yourself and why you do things, what I said earlier also, but doing that work and really understanding your personal values. And I think for me, I wish that I would have done it earlier. And I think I went through the bigger process also thinking about it, and I got the support for it, which was great. And I would only recommend that to everybody. So understanding what you actually do, what your daily actions are, and are they aligned who you want to be as a person? And what are those values that you use for your decision making, also personal life, but also then of course the work context.
Thank you. Very nice answer.
Excellent. Mm. Excellent. Celine, thanks very much. Is there anything we haven't talked about today that you would like to?
Not really. I think I would love to continue with many of the topics, but I think it would take time, a bit more time, to be honest. But I
games.
Think...
We haven't talked about games. What's your favorite game?
Oh my God, that's
a political question.
Yes. I think that I'm not going to say one game here. I'm going to say why. Answering why I like those games is that at the moment I like the games that I can play together with my daughter, and those are the fun ones. But I have to say that during the, I just said that I won't say the name, but I will say one because it was a real survival for me during the COVID. So I played a lot with my daughter and Just Dance, and it's actually a Ubisoft game, but I played that a lot, and it was a nice way to connect with my daughter and then also physically doing things, because during COVID it wasn't that easy always. So it was a great game, but I do it at the moment, I do it mostly to connect with my daughter, to be honest, and doing things together. Not sure will it be forever like that, but at the moment it fits my calendar well. How about yours?
Oh, okay. Just Dance. That sounds fantastic. I mean,
it's good. Just Dance.
That's a good note to end our discussion on.
Yeah, great. Thanks, everybody. Celine, massive thank you for being with us today. Lovely interview. Lovely thoughts and feelings. Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this with me. I really enjoyed it. Yes.
Thank you very much, Celine.
Hey, listener. It's Stefano here. Since you got until here, we think that you might like the podcast. It would mean so much if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this with as many of your friends as possible. This will help us be discovered and spread the news. Can you just take 5 minutes and do that for us? Thank you.